This is Jim Inkster, and thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing. Our show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge, and your number is 877-217-5757. Emails go to talk@talklouisiana.org. This is day two of the fall fun drive, the membership drive that happens twice a year, and it is at this time that we seek your contributions. And WRKF's funding comes from donors like you in our community, and we are hearing this program. We're on the air because someone before you donated. So in order to keep local voices on the air, it is imperative that some people call, and we hope that you're in that number. If you haven't done so, 855-893-9753, 855-893-9753, or go to WRKF.org anytime, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and show your support for public radio in this area. Again, 877-217-5757 is our number for Talk Louisiana, and we are 12 days from the election, and the headliner is the presidential election. And to show how Louisiana is geared up for presidential elections, we've had early record voting. And the Secretary of State last week on our show indicated that over 70% of the registered voters would cast ballots, and it might even reach 75%. And 1.2 million people voted for Donald Trump 4 years ago in Louisiana, and Joe Biden in defeat got 856,000 votes, so that's well over 2 million for those two candidates, not counting the third-party candidates. And the entire vote of all the candidates for governor last year, just over a million. So more than 2-to-1, we voted for the 2020 presidential election and the 2023 governor's election. So people are juiced up here and in many places about the presidential election. And this has been a good week for Donald Trump. And the Wall Street Journal reports today, and this is a national poll. It's not swing states. It's a national poll. And remember, Trump's lost two national elections in the overall vote by a combined 10 million votes. He's opened a narrow lead as voters have adopted a more positive view of his agenda. And the national survey finds that Trump is leading Kamala Harris by 2 percentage points, 47 to 45, and that includes third-party and independent candidates. The New York Times today says Republicans have spent months and millions of dollars on an effort to push former President Trump's most loyal supporters to change their minds about voting early, and there's some evidence that it's working. After polls opened yesterday in Wisconsin, or 2 days ago, Tuesday, some form of early voting has convinced in all seven of the swing states, and as of Monday, 17 million nationwide had already cast a vote, and there are initial indications that Republicans are actually showing up at the polls or returning absentee ballots with more gusto than in recent years. So, right now, the betting odds in Las Vegas have it at about 59%. If you look at a compilation of all the places that do that sort of thing, that Trump will win the election. Those are the odds. Doesn't mean he win 59-41, just means that about 6 out of 10 of the people who wager consider Trump as the likely winner, and he would become the 47th American president and would become a modern-day Grover Cleveland. He would be 45 and 47, as Cleveland was the 22nd and the 24th president. Melissa Flournoy, we'll start with you. Is this alarming for a person with a liberal heart like yours? Is this like the darkest day you've had in a while?
Well, you know, Jim, I'm sorry I'm not there in the studio with you, but let me just say the only poll that matters are the results from the actual election. And so I remain optimistic that Kamala Harris will be our next president. And so I'm not getting obsessed by all of the polls. I just think people need to get out and phone bank and call their neighbors and encourage turnout in Louisiana and around the country. So let's wait till Election Day. Let's not mourn. Let's work.
Well, you're right about all of those things, but I suspect Troy Hebert is he's dancing. He loves this. He feels like Donald Trump has regained the momentum. 3 weeks ago, it looked like Harris would win. And if the election were 3 weeks ago, she would have won. If the election were today, Trump would probably win. But Melissa's right. Much can happen in 12 days. Is there enough out there to make people change their minds or for Harris to have a big surge in getting her base to the polls, Troy Hebert?
Well, excuse me, Jim. Let me turn the party music down so y'all can hear me. First of all, good morning, Jim, and my friend Melissa, and to all you dedicated listeners. You know, when you talked about early voting, you know, the old Louisiana saying is vote early and vote often. And it looks like we're doing the first one for sure. And I do have to credit out. I mean, I think anybody have to credit Donald Trump for the turnout on why presidential elections in Louisiana and a lot of other states are so high. He's brought out some people who probably never voted in their life before.
Both for him and against him, by the way.
And exactly. Oh, that knife cuts both ways. There's no doubt about it. But as far as for the campaigns, you know, campaigns are a lot like tides. They ebb and flow. They come and go. And you said it very well in your opening. If it was 3 weeks ago, she would win. And so the trick is to winning a campaign is you want to make sure you're the candidate that has the high tide on election day. The difference, though, Jim, especially a guy like me who's been in politics for 30-something years, you know, when I first started, 90% of the people voted on election day and 10% of the squirrel hunters and deer hunters and somebody else voted early. But the statistics you just quoted, I want you to think about the game changer that is when not only the majority, but it seems like the vast majority are voting early. And I'm not sure which party is going to credit that or take advantage of it, but it sounds like the Democrats had to jump on it, and now the Republicans want to catch up with that.
Well, here is another story from the New York Times today that the headline reads, Troy and Melissa, voters strain under deluge of untruths. The Democratic Party's vice presidential nominee has been falsely accused of sexually molesting students. The claims have been spread by a former deputy sheriff from Florida, now openly working in Moscow for Russia's propaganda apparatus, on dozens of social media platforms and fake news outlets. A fake video purporting to show one victim creating fake people is a recurring Russian tactic, received more than 5 million views on X, a platform owned by the world's richest man, Elon Musk. Mr. Musk has not only leaned all in for the Republican nominee, former President Trump, but he also is using his platform to reanimate discredited claims about the validity of the election's outcome. Smears, lies, and dirty tricks, what we call disinformation, have long been a feature of American presidential campaigns. And 2 weeks before this year's vote, the torrent of half-truths, lies, fabrications, both foreign and homegrown, has exceeded anything that came before, according to officials and researchers who document disinformation. Does this make a difference? And in a close race, could it spell the winner or loser? Melissa, how do you view it?
Well, Jim, this is the thing that upsets me the most, is how much fake information, artificial intelligence, misinformation, outright lies. You know, Troy and I know there have always been lies in politics. There's always been slander. There's always been those bad mailers that drop that nobody wants to talk about, accusing people of domestic violence or whatever. But, you know, it has gotten so bad that nobody can, I guess many people don't know what truth is or what the facts are. And so I just think a lot of folks are tuning out the media, turning off the TV, wishing the commercials would go away in the swing states. I think it's dangerous. I think that we really have turned the corner in our politics where it's okay to lie on TV and everywhere else. And it really is starting to frighten me about the impact of Russian interference or fake AI or whatever. And so people need to be better consumers of information. They need to be skeptical about what they see. They need to look to validate and verify information. You know, we're entering a really bad time about just lies, fake news, and just, you know, BS.
Troy, how do you see it?
Well, you know, the dialogue you read sounds like that's a good basis for the second Russian collusion special counsel that will investigate Trump after he wins. But, you know, I agree wholeheartedly with my friend Melissa. She's right on target, you know, on everything she said. And I'll just emphasize that, you know, neither party is basically the controller or the winner of disinformation. Both all of them have some at some point in time have done that. The problem is these third parties that are getting involved. And, you know, Jim, to Melissa's point also, you know, the voters aren't dumb. They just numb. And they numb to all of the just the propaganda and the lies. And I look, I have to say the media plays a role in that. Like when they had the Hunter Biden laptop, they said it was Russian disinformation. Now it's not. And I'm sure Melissa could name something the Republicans did that, you know. So, Melissa, you're right on target, and it's a sad day in politics.
877-217-5757. We're going to a break, and we do remind you that this is day two of the fall membership drive, and we'd like to hear from you. Show your support for this hour programming at 855-893-9753. We're back in 89.3 seconds. This is Jim Inkster, and you're listening to Talk Louisiana. And your number is 877-217-5757. Another segment with Melissa Flournoy and Troy Hebert differing on the presidential election. And as I mentioned, this has been a good week for Donald Trump. And it's like the end of the third quarter, and he's ahead 17-13. And right now, if you look at the polls in those battleground states where the election will be determined, they're very close. So it becomes a turnout election. And it also becomes a case in which if 1% or 2% could be turned in another direction, even going for a third-party candidate, it would make a difference. Bloomberg and Morning Consult combined for a poll, and it shows in Georgia, Trump is ahead 50-48. In North Carolina, Trump is ahead 50-49 over Harris. In Pennsylvania, Kamala Harris 50, Donald Trump 48. In Michigan, Harris 50, Trump 46. In Wisconsin, 48-48. In Arizona, Trump 49, Harris 49. And in Nevada, Harris 49, Trump 48. So that's about as close as you can get. And as mentioned, if she wins Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, she wins the election. It's unless Trump can get that congressional seat in Omaha, but that's not likely. So right now, it could go either way. But Nate Silver says his gut tells him Trump's going to win. And issues quite often take a backseat to process. And Trump, of course, he bloviates and says all kinds of things that dominate the news cycle. For a day, Arnold Palmer dominated the news cycle. So if you have a question about issues, we would welcome them in our remaining time with Troy Hebert and Melissa Flournoy. Please be brief. We start with Trish in Grand Coteau. Trish, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. Regardless of what your party affiliation, it seems obvious, I don't know, to me, that voting for Trump today is not voting for the Trump that ran 4 years ago. And it's just not the same personality, not the same content in speeches. And I was wondering what your friend's comments on that are.
Troy?
Well, are you suggesting that Trump's dialogue is better or worse?
I think she's saying he's showing some wear and tear, just like Biden's not the same man he was 4 years ago. She's saying Trump is showing signs of diminishment.
Well, time does that to all of us, Jim, as you know. But I can tell you this, you know, the way I see it from 4 years ago, and this is a sad reality, but, you know, hate Trump's love in politics. And I guess the best way to describe this election is just full of hate. Is if they hate Trump, they're voting for Harris. And if they hate Harris, they're voting for Trump. And it's a shame that we're picking our leader on a negative feeling versus a positive feeling. Now, look, don't get me wrong. They each have 20% that love them. But the middle America don't know what to do, and they have no choice. That's the two options they have.
Okay.
And
Melissa.
Troy, I think you're absolutely right. I think Trump has now critically dangerous and not in control of his faculties. I think he's being manipulated by Elon Musk and others. You know, frankly, I don't know how normal Republicans of good conscience can choose to vote for Trump, knowing how unstable he is.
All right.
And frankly, I think Kamala Harris is going to win, and I think all of the swing states are going to break for Kamala Harris.
James in Metairie. James, you're on with Melissa and Troy.
Hi, good morning, Jim, and to your guest. Mr. Hebert, I have to ask you a question, sir. How can you continue to support Donald Trump when people who are so close to him, who worked with him, will not endorse him, to include the former Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary of State, his Chief of Staff, John Kelly, Mark Esper, former Secretary of Defense? Sir, the man is no good.
All right, what about all his former associates in his administration who say he's not ready for prime time, Troy?
Well, I think you call it just defined while most Americans actually support Trump. It's not that they love Trump, and I said this several times on your program.
It's not most
people
Americans, by the way. It's 47%, but that still might get him a win as it did 8 years ago.
Then let's use your figure. While 47% of Americans are supporting him, the majority of them just hate the establishment. They hate where their country's going. They hate that men use girls' bathrooms, men play women's sports. We in two wars, inflation. I could go on and on, Jim. People are just sick and tired of what's happening in the country. And they're so sick and tired of it, they're willing to vote for a foul-mouthed candidate like Donald Trump, who says what he believes or what's ever on his mind.
Melissa.
The reality of it.
Melissa.
Words escape me, and that rarely happens. But I think Troy's right. People are mean. They like the meanness of Donald Trump. They like the bloviating. They like the bombast. They like the hate. The scariest thing to me is to see people chanting mass deportation now. I personally think Donald Trump is a fascist. I think he's dangerous. I think the idea that people think it's okay to round up folks and use the military domestically, I think this is a frightening day.
All right, Dr. Forna. Patricia in Magnolia Woods. Hi, Patricia.
Hey, good morning. I was wondering how, if polls are conducted by phone, who answers an unknown number anymore? But I read something that they use online, they use mail surveys and text surveys. So I was wondering if Dr. Flournoy could say what she feels about how accurate polls are.
Are polls as accurate as they used to be, if they were accurate?
No. And there's a lot of junk polls out here that are sort of flooding the system. I don't trust any of the sort of the major narrative around polls for just that reason. And so I say, don't track the polls.
All right.
Call your friends, ask them to vote.
Well, let's get Troy. The only poll that counts is on election day. But these are the best in the business doing this, and I think they're usually right. But they can't measure is turnout. That's what they can't measure, and that's why this election is up for grabs. Because if Harris gets more of her voters out, it's close enough that she will win. And if Trump does, as he has twice before, exceeds his poll numbers because of turnout, he will win. Troy?
Well, I agree with a lot of things Melissa said. You know, polls, I'm not a big firm believer in polls, but I can tell you this. The issue that the Democrats face is Trump is famous for underpolling. You just can't poll the guy because so many people will not say they're voting for him because maybe it'll affect them negatively. So at the end of the day, I think unless Harris is, I think the mark is 4 or 5 points ahead. I don't think that those 2 or 3 points, that's going to break in the favor of Trump. And that's just the way, you know, people don't want to.
All right. Well, in 2022, the Democrats exceeded the polling numbers in the midterm races. So it's a case in which pollsters are trying to adjust.
Trump wasn't on the ticket, though.
He was not. Physically on the ticket, but right now he's in the minds of everybody. Mike in Villa Del Rey. Mike, good morning. You're on with Troy and Dr. Flournoy.
Yes, good morning. I have a question for Mr. Hebert on the tariffs former President Trump is pushing right now. If he pushes the tariffs as high as he says, do you think it will affect the price of the Trump Constitutional Bible?
All right, what about tariffs affecting prices and contributing to inflation?
Well, you know, I'm not an economist, Jim, but I can tell you, and Trump has just come out and said that. I think the tariffs are just a big stick he's waving at him. He don't want to really impose them, But listen, let's just face it. I don't know if tariffs are the answer, but we're losing the trade war so bad it's not even a close race. So whether it's tariffs or something else, if we don't get American workers back to work and stop buying foreign goods, then we're never going to get out of the slump we're in.
Well, the truth is the American economy is doing pretty well right now. That's the truth. But
you might want to ask some other people that, Jim.
All right, Melissa, Dr. Flournoy, respond to Senator Hebert. What?
The American economy is strong. There's more oil and gas being pumped in the United States than at any other time. We have more people working. The dollar is solid. The stock market is high. Real wages are going up. You know, I'm really worried about tariffs raising costs. But let me say one thing, Jim, before we lose our time. Give to WRKF for the fund drive.
There you go. I like that.
Great. It's a great organization.
Okay. Well, we'll be back and spend a few more minutes with Dr. Flournoy and Senator Hebert. Then it's Mark Ballard. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing, and we're wrapping it up with Senator Troy Hebert and Dr. Melissa Flournoy on opposite sides of the political spectrum and the presidential election 12 days away. Mark Ballard is on deck. But who are we going to, Robin? She says David in Atlanta has been waiting longest. So, David, you're on. You'll be our final caller for Dr. Flournoy and Senator Hebert.
Good morning. Ms. Hebert, I have a question regarding not what I think, but what I know. The Wall Street Journal reported that the United States is on course to add $20 trillion to the national debt in the next 10 years. Add Trump's tax cuts, it goes to $35 trillion. Furthermore, it's a no-brainer. Trump's tariffs will cause inflation to skyrocket, which will cause the Fed to raise interest rates, which, according to Paul Krugman, would cause America to lose 700,000 jobs.
All right. Well, will the economy be the issue in this campaign, as it was in 1992, or do other issues and perhaps the personalities of the candidates take precedent? Melissa, how do you see it?
I don't think people care about the economy at this stage.
Well, isn't that unfortunate, though? That's unfortunate.
Oh, no, I think we're 2 weeks out and people are voting on emotion. And so here's what I do want to say. More people in the state of Louisiana will vote for Kamala Harris than who voted for Jeff Landry for governor. Nobody voted in the governor's race. Jeff Landry doesn't have a mandate. I really want to encourage people to get out to vote in the state of Louisiana for Kamala Harris. We need to demonstrate that there is a base of the Democratic Party here, of people who are sane, competent, care about the economy, care about the rights of women, care about the future standing of our country in the world. So I want people to vote with their brain and their heart. And your vote is your private business. So go to the polls and vote for Kamala Harris. It's important.
You made your pitch for Harris, Troy. If you're so inclined, you can make a pitch for your guy. Why do you think he should come back? He's 78 years old. He's been convicted, first convicted felon, twice divorced. He's had a full life, shall we say.
Well, I hate to fact check my good friends, but if the economy is all that good, then why amongst the voters it polls number one as their number one concern? So I guess in politics, where you stand depends on where you sit. And there's a lot of people sitting at the table saying, are we better off today than we were 4 years ago? That old saying is going to ring true in this election. And, you know, I heard Dr. Flournoy, you know, suggest that Trump is a fascist. And then some people suggest that Harris is a socialist. The point is, we don't need a fascist or a socialist. We just need somebody that's going to go fight for the American people. And again, I think Trump has won that battle, that he's showing that he's fighting for the people. He's fighting for fair immigration, for inflation and other things. And I think that's where it's going to land. And going back, hate Trump's love. And we're going to find out in a few weeks.
Well, Troy and Melissa are both picking the person they choose to win the election. And that's quite often, it's very similar to sports. It's become a case in which our passions often determine our predictions. But let's see what happens. It's going to be a fascinating couple of weeks, and we'll, of course, be calling on Dr. Flournoy and Senator Hebert once again. And Mark Ballard is with us, the man who has his finger on the pulse in the Beltway and beyond. And Mark Ballard, of course, is following the presidential election, and he is in the most Democratic city in America, in Washington, D.C. We know D.C. is going for Kamala Harris. And by the way, when George McGovern lost 49 states, he carried Washington, D.C. When Walter Mondale lost 49 states, he carried Washington, D.C. So it's a case with the Electoral College. We pretty much know how 43 states will go, although our friend Jim Kitchen says there could be a surprise in Florida. But that would be a remarkable surprise if it were to happen. But Mark Ballard, 7 states, all within the margin of error, are going to determine who wins this election. And it's a case in which all the attention from the candidates is directed at those 7 states, advertising budgets all in those 7 states, and places like Louisiana and California and New York and Illinois and even Florida are often almost totally disregarded, even though much of the population, the more people live in states that are decided than there are states that are undecided. What do you make of where we are with how we select our president?
Well, I still think that the Electoral College is the way to go because it gives smaller states more of a state, which I know that a lot of people disagree with, in it. And basically, I think what we are seeing is a basically 50-50 type of difference in opinions between how best to continue continue governing America. And I think that that's going to continue for some time now. Simply with social media, with the advent or at least the exploitation of news sources that are based on politics rather than on facts, and that's going to continue and probably for the long future. I would say that I believe that we're looking at whoever wins, it'll be very close. And there will be not, you know, they'll all claim a mandate, of course, but that mandate will not be very clear. It'll still be, you know, within a couple of points for the House, for the Senate, and for the White House.
One thing that is evident, though, that if it is close, and it probably will be, Harris will concede the election if she loses. Trump will not.
That seems to be the case. It looks like Trump and his people are organizing and preparing for legal challenges to the election, regardless of how it turns out. Even if he gets wiped out, and it's a blowout that for the vice president, that they're setting up for that. The vice president is in a position where. There could be some legal challenges depending on what and where and what the issue is. But for the most part, she's kind of hemmed in by the fact that she keeps telling everyone that Trump will not concede the election, which it does not look like he's going to.
No, he won't. And my guess is that he will declare victory. He will go before a crowd and declare victory while polls are still open on the West Coast, which could influence voters on the West Coast, but he did it the last time. He waited until the polls closed, but the votes hadn't been counted when he declared victory, and of course he lost, and he lost in a landslide. He lost by 7 million votes, and Harris got over 300 electoral votes. Not Harris, but Biden Harris got over 300 electoral votes. But we're in a case where Americans right now, as you note, are evenly divided, and their passions are such that a lot of people don't want to accept reality, and that's true on both sides. But it does appear that neither side will be content or happy and may actually be angry and dismayed and troubled and perplexed, you can select the word, if the other one wins. And Mark, that's not good for our country.
No, and you look at that Representative Clay Higgins has said, you know, on his talk radio, because he generally only is talking to the right-wing media sources, has said that he thinks that the country's on the edge of civil war. And in many ways, he might be correct about that because it's people do not, or at least the people that he's representing, don't feel confident in government and that the government is doing something for them.
And just a personal aside, I'm not all that impressed with either running mate. Both Harris and Trump, I think, could have done better. And Mike Johnson is out there. He's been to 40 states. And that guy is really, really good, Mark. If he had been Trump's running mate, I think he would have been in better shape than with J.D. Vance. He can present, and he just, and you'll ask him a question, and he's answering it another way before you know what hit you.
Right, right. He is very good. His issue right now is to try to maintain the Republican majority in the U.S. House, and he keeps saying hopefully grow it, but at the very least to maintain it. And he's a lawyer. He's a trial lawyer, and he knows how to present before a jury, and he does a very good job at it.
Now, a listener notes that Charlie Cook, one of the best prognosticators around, he's been doing it a long time, the Cook Political Report in Washington. He's teaching at LSU, but he's now showing that two Senate races have gone to toss-ups that were thought to be safe Democratic seats in Pennsylvania and in Wisconsin. And if Donald Trump wins and he has the House and the Senate, Mark, I can only imagine how vigorous he will be. He will be it will be Trump on steroids from 2016 and 2020.
They've already laid out what they're planning to do if the House and the Senate and the White House are all together. And basically, it's going to be all of those bills that the Republican majority House passed with riders on the appropriations bills, for instance, that basically, you know, took money away from LGBTQ initiatives. It took money away from the climate change initiatives that the Biden administration has backed and took money away. It will take money away from the infrastructure bill that the Biden administration got passed as well, and that there's going to be a lot of that sort of thing. And I mean, you know, Trump himself, I guess his longest serving the chief of staff is saying that that he skews towards fascism, and so that may be, you know, that kind of investigations and that sort of thing may be popping up as well.
Well, we are about to take a break. We'll spend a few more minutes with Mark Ballard, and your number is 877-217-5757. The number to call to show your support on day two of the fall membership drive for WRKF, 855-893-9753. This is Jim Inkster. We're pleased you're along for the ride in our final quarter hour for Talk Louisiana, and we're pleased that many of you are listening. Listen on a regular basis, and if you like this hour of programming, we like to hear from you during membership time at least once a year. And if you have not contributed this year in 2024, and we are getting close to the finish line, we're not only 12 days away from the election, folks, we're only 68 days away from the end of the year. So please contribute to WRKF at 855-893-9753. And in 86 days, WRKF will celebrate its 45th anniversary, standing tall and proud, and programming that you'll hear nowhere else is right here. And I can assure you, no station in this area is covering the presidential election like WRKF. And it is balanced coverage, and it is a case in which I think the information is presented unbiased. Some might disagree, but they probably disagree because they hear something they don't like. But if you're a avid listener, you're occasionally going to hear something you don't like, no matter what side of the political spectrum you're on. 877-217-5757 for Mark Ballard. Patrick in Innisfail Estates. Patrick, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning, sir.
Hey, how you doing? I wanted to ask this question to Mark. I kind of asked it yesterday, but Rudy Giuliani's been sued for $50 million, like everything he owns. Don't you think that those damages are excessive? I mean, people that get killed in car accidents are awarded less money than these election workers.
All right. Well, Rudy Giuliani, told a lot of lies, and he's now broke. And here was a guy who I remember when he ran for president, you know who was supporting him, who ran his campaign in Louisiana? David Vitter. He was supporting Rudy Giuliani, who was a pro-choice Republican, by the way, at that time. But Rudy, I think he's in trouble no matter who wins this election, Mark Ballard.
Oh, yeah, I think so, too. I mean, when you get the judge basically saying, you know, here's the tags, start tagging up the furniture in his house. And remember that he loses his vintage Mercedes. He's going to have to move out of his apartment in New York City. And, I mean, he is going to end up paying a lot of money.
And he is an American tragedy. 23 years ago, he was America's mayor, and now he's been totally disgraced. And what a scene it was when he was
out. I was such a big fan of his when he sent the mafia to jail.
mean, yeah, when he was a U.S. attorney. But there he was outside that Four Seasons garden place with the hair dye dripping down his face, and he didn't look like he was ready for prime time then. He'd seen better days. But, Mark, you're still seeing lots of good days, and we enjoy your insights, and we'll be calling again next week. Thank you for joining us, Mark Ballard.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you. And we're joined now by Denny McClain, the great pitcher for the Detroit Tigers, who pitched in the 1968 World Series when the Tigers beat the St. Louis Cardinals in 7 games. Denny won Game 6 to send it to Game 7, and Mickey Lolich outdueled Bob Gibson and won for the ages. And now it's the Dodgers and the Yankees. And Denny, 12th time they've played, they have the biggest payrolls in the game, and they're in the biggest markets, and it may be good for TV ratings, but is it good for baseball to have the Dodgers and Yankees, or would it be better to have the Detroit Tigers and the Florida Marlins in the World Series?
Well, personally speaking, I don't care who – Jim, how are you?
Fine.
Personally, I don't care who the Detroit Tigers would play. We would play anybody. But listen, if we can't have Detroit in there, and I never thought there was really much of a chance of us getting there. I mean, because I still think there was an angel from heaven on the field here for the last 2 months in Detroit. We can't figure it out how that club all of a sudden caught the lightning. But anyway,
I thought they were going to win it. And
oh God, they come within a run of doing the whole thing.
And
you know?
one bad inning from Skubal.
Yeah,
that did it.
That's right.
Yeah, it's baseball, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, that somebody said, well, boy, this team will do this team will do that. And all they ever tell anybody is, listen, it's the reason we play the game, to see who's going to win. I mean, that is the reason we play. But these two clubs, listen, you couldn't have a better marquee matchup, the Dodgers and the Yankees. I mean, how much better can it get? You got two of the biggest home run hitters in history. You've got a great baseball team in California, the Dodgers, that play the game so well, it's crazy. The Yankees don't play that well, but they got a lot of talent. And I just think the weakness for both of the teams is the pitching. Regardless of what we've seen, I just don't think either team has one great starter. And I don't know who's going to carry the ball, but I'm so glad that we're done with this pitch in the bullpen. I mean, my Lord, I mean, the joke that our manager pulled. I mean, that was pitiful the way that club was managed with the pitching staff. Maybe if he had done it the good way, and of course no one's going to chip him forever anymore, but if he'd done it the right way, eventually they would still be playing, but that's not to be. But listen, I like the Yankees, and I my problem is I like both teams, but if I have to go with anybody, I go with the Yankees.
Well, you got two guys who are now, they're in their 30s. These are not young stars. Yes. We're talking about guys who've been around a while. Ohtani played in the Japanese League, and he is I hate the term, but a freak of sorts, because he was pitching at top levels, and he's one of the great players on the field. And then there's Aaron Judge, who is he's 6'8", and he runs like a sprinter, and he hits home runs that it reminds me of the old Dick Allen shots when he was using a 41-inch, 41-ounce bat. But they are amazing, and it is a showdown between right now and this year where the two best players in the game. It is an exciting time.
And, Jimmy, I got to tell you something. I never thought I would see anybody hit the ball harder, farther, and higher than Dick Allen did. And this kid, he hits the ball, and he doesn't. He doesn't have that monster swing either. He somehow coordinates everything. Everything's in the right place, and he hits one home run after another. He's kind of a freak of nature. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I wish the heck we had him and another one and two more after them guys. I mean, Lord, we'd have a ball club. Because the pitching thing, I'm glad they're not going to pitch him. I mean, because after sitting and playing the outfield all year long, throwing him out there now as a pitcher would be really detrimental to his future. And, you know, there's no sense in ruining a kid just because a World Series in mind. I mean, I don't think they would do it. I just don't believe the Dodgers. I think they're much more trustful and respectful than that.
Well, Fernando Valenzuela is on the front page of the New York Times today, and he died at 63. But to show how baseball goes, in his first eight starts, he was 8-0 with a .5 ERA with five shutouts. But you know what? They caught up to him. They figured him out. And in his last 28 decisions, Denny, in the majors, he was 4-24. But he was he was the bomb, and he was only 20 years old at the time, and he threw a screwball. Does anybody throw screwballs anymore?
I don't think so. Everybody's out there just chucking up that fastball now, and there's plenty of good ones. But I keep trying to tell people, they don't throw the ball any harder than we did in the 60s and 70s. My God, we're the guys that forced the game to change it. I mean, we are the crew that made them change it. So, and we apologize for that, because that was the worst thing, and they never consulted us about changing it, taking the mound down 6 inches and other things that the pitcher couldn't do. I mean, it was silly what they did without talking to the Players Association. We just weren't very strong at that point. But I'll tell you, Valenzuela, we saw him in spring training one year. We flew over there, and I'm telling you, that screwball of his was unbelievable. Then he got hurt, and of course, like I've said, 99.9% of the pitchers who pitch in the big leagues, they leave the game with a bad arm, one way or the other. And he, nonetheless, regardless of the number of decisions, he just had a bad arm at the end. And boy, let me tell you something. In the big leagues, you got a bad arm, they find out real quick.
They do. They do. And a screwball is a good way to get a bad arm, too.
Yep. Oh, boy, is it ever.
Now, a listener, this is Tracy at the Capitol, Well, you and I are a certain vintage. We remember in the early 1960s, the greatest athlete in the world was Arnold Palmer. He's back in the news reason.
Yeah.
that guy listen, had some... Go ahead.
Let me say this to you. I was a member there, and I'm not going to say any more than that. But, you know, it's like I try to tell people, don't believe everything you hear. That's all I can say. Just don't believe everything you hear. You know, Arnie was a great guy. I was represented by the same guy down there, McCormick, for years.
Mark McCormick, yeah.
Yeah, Mark McCormick. I was represented by him for a long time. And I can tell you that great organization, great, great law firm. And some great clients, by the way.
Well, athletes... are sometimes not golfers, but Arnold Palmer and Tiger Woods were athletes. Arnold was built like Popeye, and that was part of his charm. He was a very physical guy. He was a hacker, and he showed his emotion on the course. He, of course, in those days, he would be smoking on the course. He was what they would call at that time a man's man, Denny McClain.
He sure was. I mean, the first time I ever saw him was in McCormick's office in Cleveland, and I was just, he wasn't that big of a guy. I mean, he wasn't a monster like some of these kids are today. And boy, but could he hit it? I mean, he played a lot of golf like I think most of us did at the time. You know, a little army golf, a little left, a little right, a little long, a little short. And, you know, you wind up having more respect and enjoying his game. I never enjoyed watching anybody more than I did Arnie. Because of one of the big factors which you mentioned was his emotion.
He had charisma, as does Denny McClain to this day. And thank you, Denny. We'll be calling again soon. Back tomorrow. Stay safe and stay tuned.